Welcome to a Tuesday night edition of the Dunked On Basketball Podcast, where we have, as has happened fairly often, at least according to his players in his career, Snakes in the Grass and George Karl together again. Danny LaRue joining me here. So it looks like, now at least according to some stories, that a crisis has been reached in Sacramento.
Obviously, I'm disappointed that it seems like that organization is plagued with dysfunction, but as a CBA nerd, as a DeMarcus Cousins fan, I am beyond excited for just even, like, when I saw that last night, I was just so excited for the potential of making an army of fake trades, because I think that Cousins is very underappreciated because he plays on such a moribund franchise, but he is a remarkable talent.
Yeah, and guess what, everyone? We usually don't do this kind of stuff, engage in completely rampant speculation, but just once I will indulge Danny today. We have a bunch of potential fake trades for Cousins, but I think really, why don't we run down first exactly what really is out there at this point? And I think that discussion has to start with a statement that the Kings say they don't want to move him. Vlade Divac has said in multiple interviews over the last couple of days that he wants Cousins there, that he's going to be a part of the future. He even said in a rather comical interview in which he was wearing a construction hat at the new arena site today that, you know, he expects Karl to be the coach. And, you know, he didn't want to address any rumors beyond that. So, you know, that's one side of the coin. What's the other side of the coin?
Well, actually, I want to say one other huge piece of that side of the coin before we move on, and that's less than an hour before the report that caused a lot of this. Vivek Ranadive was doing an interview and said pretty clearly that they weren't going to trade Cousins, and Vivek is the decider, if you want to call it that, in that organization, as far as I can tell, though that gets complicated with the Kings because they're the Kings. So, I mean, you have some very, very important people who are on that camp, but then Adrian Wojnarowski made one of my favorite Woj bombs of recent history and said that George Karl, the coach of the Kings, the recently hired coach of the Kings, is actively trying to get DeMarcus Cousins traded.
Yeah, and we've had all sorts of other reports coming out now, and I'm sorry if I can't remember the sources for quite all of them, but there was one that Pete D'Alessandro is basically polling members of the organization around the time Karl was hired of whether they would rather have Karl or Cousins. D'Alessandro now is working for the Nuggets, so make of that what you will. So that's one report. I mean, another one is that Karl was going to players and trying to get their support for potentially a Cousins trade. Not really sure who else is on the team that even matters besides Cousins, frankly, with this the kind of talent that they have. I mean, maybe it's someone like Rudy Gay, but, you know, in the grand scheme of, you know, pieces that you really want long term for a team that you're going to look at as big assets, they don't have much other than Cousins, frankly. So, you know, I'm not sure how much that means. And anything else that I'm missing here as far as just like what the reported situation is right now?
Yeah, there's another piece. I believe it was Jason Jones of the SACB tweeted last night, shortly after all of this happened, that from what he knew, Karl and Cousins hadn't spoken since April. Which is bad. That's real bad. And I mean, and so then what led to the response is DeMarcus Cousins becoming the king of emoji tweets by tweeting out just a picture of grass, a picture of an emoji of a snake, an emoji of grass. So a snake in the grass. And as some people have talked about, there is this really fascinating connection with athletes using, specifically basketball players, using that language. And a lot of times that potentially referring to George Karl.
Yeah, Iguodala had used it. J.R. Smith, was it Carmelo mentioned it also? I think it was a lot, and maybe even someone else I'm forgetting too, right? At least, Lawson as well.
Yeah, Lawson. Oh, and that was the other unbelievably great report that came out today was, I can't remember, it was a writer from Denver, said that Karl has been actively pushing not only to trade Cousins, but to acquire Kenneth Fareed and the aforementioned Ty Lawson. And I just cracked up. I just lost it. Because if that's really where he wants to go, then I feel like the decision should be made a very different way.
So let's talk about something first before we really get into the nitty-gritty of this situation. I mean, I guess we'll take these reports at their word for now on that Divots and Ranadive want Cousins to stay. I mean, Jason Jones even has reported that Cousins himself wants to stay, although there have also been some other reports that he now has quietly asked for a trade, given the Carl situation. And certainly, you know, some others have speculated slash reported that this is more an issue of his representation trying to do this to get it moved on. So you've got that on the one hand. And then also, you know, there's reports that Carl just wants to get him traded, but then also still wants to win. And, you know, so he can challenge Don Nelson's all-time win record, which, you know, I mean, if you're going to trade Cousins, it certainly gets difficult to get equal value back in terms of actually winning. But and the reason for that is DeMarcus Cousins is a great, great player. Like, when I did my top 10 players in the league, I had him at number 7. I feel very strongly that that is still the case. He really improved defensively at the start of this year and even towards the end of last year, which I didn't believe at first, but some of the advanced metrics started to really like him. Zach Lowe reported that a lot of teams' advanced metrics started to really like Cousins' defense. And the Kings played good defense with him until he was felled by the meningitis earlier in the year. So you'd say he's now at least, you know, an average defensive player as a center. And then his unbelievable rebounding, offensive rebounding, passing, ability to bludgeon people inside. Really one of the few guys in the league that, you know, you probably need to double team in the low post. And especially if he were on a team with more shooting around him and didn't need to force as many long twos as he sometimes does, if he were really able to concentrate more in the post and just back guys down and then find shooters, he would be an unstoppable player. I mean, he still averaged 24 points and, you know, who knows how many rebounds, a lot of rebounds, definitely well into double figures. I don't remember exactly how many. I mean, I think he's a top 10 player in this league and he's a top 10 asset in this league maybe also.
Yeah, and that's what makes him different than Kevin Love, is that he can't become a free agent right away. He has 3 more years on his contract. And what I think about with DeMarcus is basketball is a very collaborative sport, and it is a sport that we have seen in a variety of contexts that playing with better players, not all the time, but usually, playing with better players can help a guy's game a lot. And that's true of what I call dependent players and independent players. I mean, we've seen with Stephen Curry how much better he's doing when he has a 48 minutes of competent playing around him as opposed to what it was at the beginning of his career when it was close to zero. And that's true of a lot of guys. I mean, that's just the one that I saw firsthand because I cover the Warriors. And we've seen it with LeBron at various stages of his career. And Cousins has never had that. You know, he got to the Kings when they were bad, and they have continued to be bad. And that isn't to say that, you know, that he could, you know, that he couldn't be, you know, better. I think that he's done an incredible job, but it is incredible to me what he has done without having players who take attention away from the defense. You know, Rudy Gay is a solid player. He's done better in Sacramento than I expected, but he's not that guy. He's not a guy who takes a ton of attention, who people are going to turn away. They can just go make DeMarcus Cousins the focus of their defense every single night, and he's still doing what he's doing.
Yeah, and they played winning basketball at the start of the year before he got hurt. You know, not a huge amount of time, but about a little over 15 games. And then also just when he was on the court, and especially when he was on the court with the starters last year. I mean, they had one of the worst benches in basketball last year. So, I mean, he is a player who you at one point could have said, oh, he was just, you know, he's putting up box score statistics. But no, at this point, he actually, there is substantial evidence that he not only is a great individual talent, but contributes to playing winning basketball on the floor as well by plus minus metrics. So you really have to look at him as a great player under contract for 3 more years at what was the max, and is now for the last 2 years of that is going to be way under the max, you know, almost really $10 million less than he could be making. And max contract players, the top 10 players in the league, are underpaid because of the system, and he's going to be underpaid even for those, even as max contracts go.
And not only that, but he has 5 years of experience, he has a lot of track record, and he still hasn't turned 25 yet. This is a guy who isn't close to his prime, I would say. I think he has a long way to go, and he's been amazing. So one question I wanted to ask you, as somebody who is less of a DeMarcus Cousins homer like me, how would you compare his trade value, quote-unquote, to James Harden's? When James Harden was traded.
Oh, when James Harden was traded.
Correct.
Oh, far higher.
Yeah.
Because his contract is better. You know, he at least is going to... I mean, Harden was younger, which helps. And he had 1 year of still being on his rookie contract left, which also helps. But, you know, Cousins is a center. I mean, Harden, you couldn't have looked at him as a top 10 player at the time, you know, and you couldn't be sure that he was going to develop into that, and certainly not as quickly as he did. So at the time, he's much higher.
Yeah, I'm trying to think of the last time that he isn't clearly on the market yet, but if he were, I'm trying to think of the last player of his caliber of, like, let's say a top 10 guy under even the age of 28. I mean, those players just don't. Yeah, Kevin Love, but Kevin Love only has 1 year left on his deal. He had an opt out.
That's right. Yeah, I mean, yeah, someone who would be under team control, and it's real interesting too. I mean, and let's get into this now. I mean, we're going to talk about potential trade scenarios, but do you think that they can keep him and keep Carl, or you know, do they? I mean, because I think that's, for me, he's so good, you're never going to get equal value back, realistically. I don't think. I mean, we'll go through some scenarios, but I don't think there's a team that gives that up equal value. So with that being the case, is there a way to make this work still? What do you think?
I'm optimistic always with relationships, and it's not like there's anything, you know, deep there, you know, like something more visceral, like, you know, some sort of really, really bad personal thing there. It's just, you know, a guy wants a guy traded. And the other...
I don't know about that. I mean, George Karl came in and... You know, first of all, there are some reports that they didn't even want him in, at least his representation, if not Cousins. And then secondly, so there's that antipathy. And then Carl, I'm sure, was spooked by that or just wanted to get rid of him or whatever. I mean, the fact that these reports are coming out, less than 6 months after George was hired. And then also that he actually was interviewed today as well and kind of had a chance to, you know, he did the usual dismissing of rumors and lies and all that, but he also didn't say, hey, I really want DeMarcus on the team. He had a chance to say that, and he didn't. So, I mean, I think you got to at least conclude that there's probably some fire there with that smoke. I think that I can't remember the last time that a coach-player relationship was both this bad and this public, frankly.
That's a good point. And the other component of this that I think is really important to mention, I think we're on the same page here, is that if you have to choose between DeMarcus Cousins and George Karl, you choose DeMarcus Cousins every time.
Yeah, no, I absolutely. And, I mean, yeah, you know, fine, you might have to pay Carl's salary. I forget what he's making, like $3 million a year or something like that, maybe a little more than that. But when you consider the cost that you're getting, you know, $15 million extra per year in value out of Cousins that you're going to have to make up, on the court, I mean, it's not like actual money. We're not talking apples and oranges here, but it's so clear that, I mean, yeah, you might take a little PR hit from having to move on from Carl. And, you know, I'm sure that Cousins isn't going to be too happy either, about the whole situation, but at least, you know, he'll have theoretically won the power struggle. I don't know, man. It's, a lot of moving parts there, but yeah, I mean, if Pete D'Alessandro asked me whether I wanted, Cousins or Carl, you know, no matter how difficult DeMarcus is to deal with, and reports are that he can be very difficult, maybe has improved a little bit, but maybe not that much, you know, depending on who you talk to. Yeah, I mean, it's Cousins by a mile. No two ways about it.
Yeah. So do you want to move on to hypotheticals now?
Well, I do want to say this, too, in terms of setting the scene here. That, I mean, you think about draft picks, right? You get draft picks in the hope that they will develop into a top 10 player like DeMarcus Cousins. And the chances of that happening, let's say, you know, for one example would be if the Lakers offered a package built around the number 2 pick. Well, and let's say that's Jahlil Okafor, who I think is going to be pretty good. Jahlil Okafor, maybe 5 years from now, if he doesn't get injured, if he learns to defend, if, maybe he becomes DeMarcus Cousins someday, right? Like, and that's what are the chances of that? 15%, maybe.
Yeah, I was thinking 10.
That he's as good ever as DeMarcus is right now, and DeMarcus isn't even, you know, he probably has another year or two of development even to get better at not even 25 yet. So, you know, it's not the same, especially when you have 3 years of team control left. What I would say, however, is if they don't get a lot better this year, if they keep him and they don't get a lot better this year, you probably then, if you're going to be smart, I mean, and you know, you're going to forget about the whole, okay, we're moving into a new arena, blah, blah, blah. We need to be good. If let's say your real goal as an ownership is to win a championship someday, and you get the feeling that Cousins is unhappy there after another year in which you miss the playoffs, then the time to deal him is when he has 2 years left on his deal, not when he has 1 year left on his deal. Because you can just get so much more for him then. So, it, you know, if you think about it, they really, to me, only have one more year before things really kind of come to a head and you have to face the reality that you might lose him. And the time to act, especially in this new NBA, when you can't really sign guys to an extension, is you got to trade them 2 years before, because then you can do get the Deron Williams type of package where a team can have 2 years of control of him, you know, feel like they can sell on the culture. Only having 1 year left takes out a lot of markets, and you basically can only deal him to pretty much exactly where he wants to go. And then you're not getting the kind of awesome package, you know, even like certainly nowhere near like what the Timberwolves got for Love. That was just a unique, perfect storm where Cleveland just got LeBron and needed to win now. So that is something to consider, and potentially an argument in favor of trading him is, look, you really only have 1 year left, and if you don't think you can make the playoffs this year, then maybe it makes more sense. But then, of course, you're just starting again from square one.
Yeah, I really do agree with you. And the point you make about moving him is very astute, because my instinct, and again, no inside sources or anything, is that, especially after everything that he's dealt with, that he might be thinking heavily about leaving the Kings when he gets his true freedom. And you're right that if that becomes not a possibility but an expectation, that totally changes the conversation. That changes it for every guy. And you see that all over the map. I mean, Deron Williams is a great example of that, that you can see that. And you're running a risk by keeping him if you're the Kings, but at the same point, he is your path to legitimacy now. There is no other path. There is nobody else that is on your roster. There is nothing else that's in your stable that can be that thing, that can be the best player, or I would argue even the second best player on a really good team.
Yeah, I mean, DeMarcus Cousins, even as he is right now, if you put the right pieces around him, which they are very, very far away from doing, could be the best player on a championship team. He's that good right now, and he hopefully will even get better, and he has a pretty decent health record as well, which is also something you have to consider. So let's talk about, you know, let's say George Karl gets his way, right? And not only do they move on from Cousins, but they trade for pieces that theoretically will help right now. That's a terrible strategy, isn't it?
It's a really bad strategy, because the rest of the team isn't good enough to support that. So they're not going to be good. I mean, you think about, there's something that you and I have talked about, and I talked about with Seth Partnow about the Lakers, is that how much better would they have to be to make the playoffs? And that's just make the playoffs. That's not the second rounder. To me, when you're talking about making a team respectable, like really good, you're talking conference finals. Like, to me, that's when I think about a player and I think they're blankety blank, it's because they're this good on a conference finals team. Because NBA finals, you get into a lot of aberrational stuff. But conference finals, I think we have a pretty fair expectation of what it takes to get there. And the problem with the Kings is, even if you hit the lottery and got, let's say, the best player, or a guy who could be the best player on that kind of a team, you don't have 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8. And it's really hard to get 2 through 4 any other way. You know, that's not an easy thing to do. If you hit in the draft, I mean, maybe that person gets to be one of those spots in 2 years. Maybe, if you're really, really lucky. So it doesn't make any sense, because if you can't get from A to B, then why try to get from A to B? Why not go for something else?
Yeah, I agree with you. And also, just because the way that the league's contracts are set up, because the two most valuable types of contracts are rookie contracts and max contracts to players who actually, you know, are a top 10 player or so in the league and actually, you know, if they're truly being compensated for their performance, would be making way more than the max. And the side effect of the fact that both the max contracts and the rookie contracts are limited is everyone else in between is overpaid. So if you're going to get an asset back for him, you're necessarily sort of getting kind of guys more in the middle who are making too much. And, you know, the way it works in the NBA is you don't, you know, three Bs don't equal one A, you know. So, I mean, you could get three really totally good role players, you know, especially, but when you consider the market, that's, there's not really that much that they could get there. You know, even if you got three really good role players, you know, three guys on the level of like Damari Carroll or something, or even sort of like a lower, you know, someone like Jeff Teague or something, like a lower level all-star, not to necessarily pick the Hawks, just those are what came to mind. But there's just, there's no way that whatever you're going to get for Cousins in terms of immediate contributors, veterans, are going to add up to what he can do. I mean, especially in this Western Conference, I don't foresee any way that they could trade him and make the playoffs next year. Whereas at least if you keep him, maybe you could come up with a path where that could be possible.
Yeah, and the other part of it, you talked about how three Bs don't equal an A. The other component of that that's really important to talk about is that A players make C and D players better. And so you talk about how a guy like Steph Curry or LeBron James, you know, those truly elite players, generally speaking, and I think this could be true of DeMarcus as well with time, they make those surrounding players better, so you actually get even more surplus value because they make it easier for those guys and because of the way defenses and offenses pay attention to them.
All right, you ready for some fake trades?
Yeah, I'm always ready for fake trades.
All right, what do you got?
Okay, so I feel like the most fun way to start this is with the
and
most...
And by the way, if you're ready for some fake trades, I am all ready to shoot down some fake trades.
Oh, see, that's the thing about this, is you're never making it in terms of... It's never going to be a perfect thing, but so where I like to think about when you go through a hypothetical like this is, what are the most logical destinations? And so for me, that is a place where Cousins would do well and a place that also has the assets to make the trade. You can make a third component of... places that have the desire to do it, which would take out a team like the Warriors, where he would do well and have the assets, but that probably wouldn't want to make that trade. And so my A1 destination, should DeMarcus Cousins eventually get on the market, is the Washington Wizards. And the reason for that is that they have talent already, so they would be good with him quickly, and they have players that are good that they could trade in the deal without sacrificing team quality too much. So it would start with Bradley Beal. And he's a very good player. He's still on a team-friendly contract. Yeah, he plays the same position as Ben McLemore. I don't really care. He's better than Ben McLemore. Then you could go with Nene or Marcin Gortat, depending on... That's partially salary filler. That's partially because that's somebody to replace Cousins in the more immediate sense, especially if you want to get better sooner. Nene is expiring and not as good. Gortat has a couple more years and is better. And then if you wanted to include him, Otto Porter is another guy he's not, you know, the top guy in a good team, but he's, you know, fringe starter quality backup, another player to add to their depth.
Yeah, and young, someone who has some potential, but yeah, and yeah, I mean, so, but this is a perfect example, right? No way they're as good next year if they get those guys versus if they
not even close.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, and the one thing that is a little bit more intriguing about these fake trade scenarios than a lot of them is you can start to approach closer to what his full value is. Because he's under contract for these next 3 years, right? Whereas someone like Love, you couldn't trade him to, like, Utah because there's no way Utah would give up a lot of his full value and assets because there's no expectations he would re-sign there. But now, you know, you can trade him to kind of a non-free agent destination, and that team can at least feel like, all right, we got 3 years of him under contract, and maybe we can get good, and we could even potentially keep him 3 years from now, and... you know, 3 years of him is worth a lot to give up for anyway. So it opens things up a little bit more. But I think as we get into some of these, you'll see, you know, especially because he does have a little bit of this reputation as a malcontent, where if you just said to me, hey, is this worth as much as Cousins, you know, not including any other factors, you probably still can't get up to that level because I think these teams are not going to want to give up those level of assets. So a couple of things that, like, occurred to me, right? Let's say they approached Minnesota and they said, you know, give us Andrew Wiggins and, you know, some salary filler for DeMarcus Cousins. What do you think of that trade?
I would be, God, that's, I love Cousins, but the benefit that you have with Wiggins, and you and I both were not super high on him early on, is that you not only get 3 years of team control, you have seven. And maybe even more than that. And that's really nice. So I probably, depending on what the filler was, I would not do it if it included Nikola Pekovic, because I feel like he's a net negative right now. I actually was dealing with this with a column that's going up in the next couple days. But you could comprise other salary filler that would be more palatable, you know, whether it be expiring contracts like Chase Bunger or things like that. But I would be, Wiggins is one of the few guys, and I love Cousins. I have Cousins higher than Wiggins just because of his value to a team like Minnesota that has trouble getting free agents. I think that he has a particularly high value.
Yeah, I mean, maybe, you know, then they have the, Minnesota has the number one pick too. So would you do that if you were Minnesota? I mean, I think you got to keep in context here still how good Cousins is,
that's
right?
That's true. Yeah, I mean, it's a close Wiggins, call.
Yeah, Wiggins is a huge, huge part of the future. Great character kid, you know, under team control. But he's also a rookie who had a 13 PR last year, you know? So, yeah. The odds are still against him ever becoming as good as Cousins is. But, you know, I mean, I think there's a lot of just component to, hey, this is who we have. We really like this guy. He's part of the future. Everyone in Minnesota loves him. You know, we're going to bring in Cousins, who kind of, you know, and not exactly a coach's dream, as a lot of people would tell it. Tough to say. I think if I were Minnesota, if I could get Cousins, I would see what I could also get for the number one pick. And maybe I could just roll out, like, with Cousins, you get another, like, star player for the number one pick, and you got Ricky Rubio, and then you can fill in around those guys. They've been bad for so long, you could have a playoff team if you did that, maybe. I mean, I don't even want to get into what they could get for the number one pick.
Or
I mean,
Cousins and Towns would just be magnificent.
Nah, Towns is a center to me. I don't like him at power forward.
That's true. He's one of the, I just think it'd be fun. I agree with you that Towns is a center, but I just think that combination might work. Granted, I'm somebody who still, you know my opinion on Cauley Stein and Cousins, so I'm a little bit delusional in this space.
So anyway, yeah, but that's the sort of thing. So, all right, yes or no, you doing that deal if you're Minnesota or not?
I don't think I am, but I could completely see the argument the other way. Absolutely see it the other way.
Okay, how about Milwaukee? I call up. And I say, give me Jabari and Giannis and salary filler for Cousins.
I would do that as Milwaukee.
Both of those guys.
Yeah, I think I'd do it. Giannis. I'm the sponsor of his basketball reference page. I am definitely a fan, but the odds.
Oh, yeah. So you just want him to be like 90 miles away from us?
Oh man. No, not that at all. No, because this is as the GM of Milwaukee. I would be trading him away. But the fundamental concept, though, is that it's very unlikely, as much as I like him, that he becomes that top 10 force guy. He's more of an enigma, an interesting player, a guy who could be a very useful player on a great team, than a Kevin Durant, DeMarcus Cousins type player. That's just who he is. And I like Jabari a lot. I think I had Jabari second in the last draft class. But right now, he's in that camp, too. He's a very good player, yeah. But it's unlikely.
Coming off a torn ACL.
Exactly. It's not. People need to appreciate how hard it is to get a top 10 guy who's under the age of 26. Like, those guys don't change hands very often, and you get him for 3 years. You could do so much with that, and I think that, and that leads me into, we'll go back to Milwaukee because I want to hear your opinion on it. I feel like Philadelphia is such a logical place for this because they have young talent, they have cap space, but they also have just a metric ton of assets.
Well, yeah, I mean, with Milwaukee, I don't think I actually would do it if I were them because, and again, you know, this is all just total speculation. Let's be very clear about this. And the reason for that is I think if you get Cousins, then, you know, you're going to be too good to really get anybody else in the draft. You're going to have cap space this summer, assuming you give up equivalent salary. you'll have, close to about, 18 million or so in cap space. I think I forget enough basically for a max contract. I forget exactly what it is. So you could bring somebody else in maybe, but you're still in Milwaukee. Is that really a team that now is going to compete for a long time? Maybe you bring someone else in 2016, but to me, I think while it is likely that, Cousins, neither of those guys ends up ever being as good as Cousins, you still have a possibility that you hit on both of those guys big time. And then you have, a pretty crazy, interesting team.
Flexible too.
Yeah. So, and then, maybe you can fill in a little bit around those guys instead because they're still making less than Cousins is. So that's another thought, basically.
I think you swayed me.
Yeah, when you think about it, it's Jabari and it's Giannis, and then it's another $8 million or so for Cousins, versus having Cousins over these next few years, and then they're also there Chris Middleton too, so that's another one who they'll probably have, assuming that they don't let him get away. So I think with those three guys, they just are so interesting. And could maybe be the type of team that it would just be so hard to guard if they can get the right pieces around him. But yeah, if you get Cousins and then you got Middleton and Michael Carter Williams, yeah, maybe. I don't know. I wasn't thinking about Middleton enough. So maybe we've kind of switched positions a little bit on this. But yeah, that's still no way Milwaukee ever does that, right?
Yeah, I think they don't. I think they really don't consider doing it, but it would definitely be compelling.
It's just the psychology of it, right? It's like, oh my God, we have these amazing guys, and then it's just so hard to get rid of them. You've done your marketing campaign around these guys, and it's just, it really becomes difficult. But then again, it's DeMarcus Cousins. He's really good. I think if he were more of a considered a, if not, I'm not going to call him a low character guy. I'll call him a difficult guy. If he didn't have that reputation, I think it might be a lot easier for some of these teams to give up some of these prize assets. LA, what do you think about them? I don't think there's any asset that they have that would entice me to surrender Cousins. You could offer me everything in the cupboard that they have, and I wouldn't do it.
The only exception to that for me is if Karl Towns falls to two. Maybe. Then I would consider it. And it would be everything. Like, people would talk about, I don't want to give up Julius Randle and the number two pick. Granted, I could crap talk Lakers fans forever. But if you're talking about getting close to commensurate value for DeMarcus Cousins, we're talking, as you said, whole cupboard. We're talking number two, Julius Randle, Clarkson, maybe even taking some bad salary back. The Kings don't have horrible salary, just be a couple years of inconvenience. But it would take all of that. All of it. And Karl Towns.
All right. How about this one? Utah, Rudy Gobert, Dante Exum, and Alec Burks.
I wouldn't do that if I were Utah. I love Rudy way too much. It's funny. I saw Utah on your list, and I made a reference somewhere that I think there are 28 GMs that should be calling about Cousins, and the only one that shouldn't is Lindsay and the Jazz, because I just feel that while Cousins is a great player, They don't need to take that risk right now. They have a guy.
Yeah, and they maybe want to just let these guys grow. These are, high quality guys they have. And maybe you could say just Gobert. What about just Gobert and Alec Burks?
Now that's more interesting. Because then basically all you're doing is you're saying, what are the odds that Rudy becomes DeMarcus or better? And that is a hard call. I don't think that's super likely. DeMarcus is already amazing. So if you're talking that, I think I would probably take that if I were Utah.
Yeah, no, I think so. You could throw in someone else other than Dante, but I think even if it were Dante, Gobert, and Burks, then you would have a front court of Hayward, Favors, and DeMarcus Cousins.
Good Lord.
Now, Cousins and Favors are a little bit redundant from a scoring standpoint, so that could be a little bit of an issue.
But defensively, it would work.
Yeah, and they could draft a point guard this year. They could try to pick up a point guard in free agency, make another trade for someone like Ty Lawson. And then you got a squad. Dante Exum is someone that I loved coming out of the draft, but he's looked great defensively. He's got great vision. But, you know, the fact is he proved completely unable to score as a rookie, did not look good. I expect that he's going to be a lot better, but we don't know whether that's going to be the case. So, and there aren't that many rookie point guards who have had the type of offensive season he's had that have gone on to be even, you know, real good players. So when you consider that, you know, something to consider. But I mean, I think that's the sort of package that if I were running the Kings, that it would take for me. All right, you got any other ones?
Sixers. I feel like we have to talk about it, and that would be Embiid.
No, I mean, they don't have enough as far as I'm concerned.
Well, what you have to think about with them is that they have – you're thinking not just immediate assets, because when you're talking Sixers, you're also talking that their 2016 asset group is ridiculous because they have their own pick and they have the Lakers pick, which I would expect will be somewhere in the 5 to 10 range.
Yeah, and that pick is top three protected.
Correct. But the Lakers are too short term to, you know, they're not going to be one of the three worst teams in the league. They could, you know, do well in the lottery, but I don't think they're going to be the third worst team in the league again.
Yeah. So, yeah, I mean, that pick probably does get conveyed, and we'll have to see how their offseason turns out too. So maybe you would wait to do it until after that. But yeah, I don't know that they, I mean, and again, theoretically, they want to compete. So, I mean, this is what makes it so difficult to say that you want to compete. Because, I mean, there's nobody on these lists who is going to make you as good right now, even at the Jabari.
Oh, there's only one, but they're not making the trade. And that's the Warriors.
Yeah. Well, no, even the Warriors. Like, if you traded Cousins for Barnes and Bogut, there's no way you're as good as if you have Cousins. That is what you're kind of thinking of, right?
It depends on what the other pieces are. I mean, if they include other guys that would be useful, I think you could build an aggregate package that would be pretty close. But even then, I mean, I'm not the biggest Harrison Barnes fan in the world. So, yeah, I definitely think you could make that argument. But I also think that it would be very disappointing. We talked about how it would be silly for the Kings to go short term. I feel like if you're going to make this move, you make the best possible move for your team, which is more of a long-term trade. And that's why I think the Sixers actually can and should be a factor. And I've heard a lot about the Celtics, and Danny Ainge has pulled the rabbit from the hat before. I would be, personally, in some ways, I would be frustrated if he did it again, just because I like it when different people get lucky as opposed to the same person again. Just not saying that he hasn't earned it. It's just something for me, just the way that I feel. But for me, the Celtics don't have any assets that are better than Philadelphia's assets.
Well, let's run through the list of assets that they, in fact, have. They have Brooklyn's 2016 first-rounder. That, especially if Brooklyn were to lose Brook Lopez, they wouldn't really be able to replace him. You know, Thad Young also opted out, which we'll talk to when we get to some of the news items. You know, so if they lose both of those guys and they can't really replace either of them very well, they could be terrible next year. So that could be very valuable. They're owed a first rounder that's top seven protected from Dallas starting next year. Dallas may take a step back next year as well. They're owed a top 10 protected first rounder essentially from the Grizzlies. It gradually goes down and then is unprotected in 2021. And then they can swap first rounders with the Nets in 2017, and they're owed another first rounder for the Nets in 2018, and then they have all their own picks too. I mean, so, you know, you might say, hey, yeah, give me all of those. But then again, what are you hoping to get once you get all those? You're hoping to get a superstar that that you already have, and there's no guarantee even that any of those picks ends up being a top five pick. So it becomes kind of difficult to do that too. You know, they also have Marcus Smart. They have Isaiah Thomas, which would be hilarious if they brought him back.
Wouldn't it be more hilarious though if Cousins got traded there and Thomas stayed?
Well, yeah, actually, Isaiah wrote a little comment on his Instagram post recently saying, "Hey, you know, we can help you out with that." So, yeah, I mean, it's funny. There are these reports that like Cousins didn't like him and all this stuff, and that's why the Kings didn't re-sign him and then did a sign and trade for him with Phoenix, and that he's tough to get along with. But surprising then if that were actually the case that he would make that comment. But
going back to their top level assets, would you take Brooklyn's first rounder over? I'm going to give you five assets, and tell me if you would take Boston's first rounder over or the best, whatever you think the best Boston asset is. I assume it's Brooklyn's.
This is your favorite podcast that we've ever done by like an order of magnitude.
Oh, not even close, but I do love this. But so here's my point. I've Celtics fans are probably going to send me hate mail. I've been wanting to make this point for months now. So, okay, would you rather have Joel Embiid or Brooklyn's first-rounder next year?
We don't know what Embiid's health situation is, and we don't know if
okay, he's the
answer that question 3 weeks from now.
Okay, let's skip him. He's hard right now.
And how bad the Nets offseason is going to be.
Nerlens Noel or the Brooklyn first-rounder?
Nerlens.
The number three pick in this draft or Brooklyn's first-rounder next year?
Yeah, number three.
The Lakers pick next year or Brooklyn's pick?
Well, I mean, I see the point that you're making.
All of their assets are better. Like, the Celtics have an accumulation.
They have so many of them that, I mean, you know, if we talk about the draft as being a lottery, you know, essentially a second lottery of are you going to hit or not, having that many potential hits, both in terms of, you know, some of these teams not being that good, or just that you might find a star if you have six draft picks or whatever it is. You know, I mean, that's where the value comes in. I don't think that any of those individual assets maybe, you know, matches up with what Philly has. I mean, I would probably, yeah. So that's one way of looking at it. But I totally understand what you're saying. I mean, and, you know, maybe all these assets aren't as good as Boston thinks they are. I mean, and then, because essentially, right, like, you trade Cousins for these assets. All right, you just traded DeMarcus Cousins for the right to be where Boston is right now, which isn't really that great, right?
And not only that, but if you bought DeMarcus Cousins, adding them to Boston, it makes all of Boston's picks less valuable. So, because he's actually a good basketball player. And that team, I mean, but the other part of this Boston thing is that, in a way, it's really high praise for Brad Stevens that part of the reason their assets aren't as good as Philadelphia's is that they've been way better than Philadelphia, and so they don't have the top-end asset. You know, you talk about how, to me, like a top-five pick is substantially more valuable than something 10 or lower. You know, how many picks it would take it's a large number. You know, it's at least three probably for me. And I don't see the Celtics as being a team that is going to have a top-five pick anytime soon, regardless of their talent.
It's a cruel irony for Mike Zarin, who's one of the greatest crusaders against the current lottery system, and I actually really don't like his idea, the wheel, frankly, and we'll talk more about that, I'm sure, at some point. But it is unfortunate for him that he really just hates the incentives of being bad, and now, of course, like the Celtics organization is kind of paying the price a little bit for this unexpected playoff berth, and you know, even as good as they were last year, a little bit better than, you know, only getting the number six pick. So. Yeah, I mean, that is a little unfair. Let's do. You got any more fake trades?
Let me take a quick look. Well, we can. Let's just have a little discussion about the Warriors hypothetical, just because I find it the most intellectually interesting of the batch.
I don't. I can't say I agree on that because, I mean, there's just no way they're going to do it. They won 67 games this year, and even if you could say, all right, DeMarcus Cousins is so much better than Barnes and Bogut put together. In a vacuum, this is a team that has prided itself on putting together great character guys. Their chemistry has been cited left and right as such an awesome thing. And, you know, Cousins is difficult to deal with. And, I mean, even though there's a talent upgrade, you can't really get much better than 67 wins anyway. They are going to regress a little bit. And you might say, hey, you know, this is a move also for 3 years from now when, you know, Steph Curry is going to be 30 and Klay Thompson will be 28 and, you know, we'll still have Cousins, he can transition into being the centerpiece. But, I mean, you know, it's just the law of unintended consequences that you have someone that you know is just one of the best teams in NBA history, even if you're upgrading very clearly on talent. I think you can't risk it.
I see what you're saying, but at the same time, I think that if you could do a trade with that structure, and let's say they don't have to sacrifice a bunch of depth pieces, and I think that they could do that, It makes them more resilient. I think that the Warriors had a great team. I think that they did a really good job. They were insanely well coached. But I do think that bad chemistry is very destructive. But I feel like, and this is somebody who was in the locker room and who thinks these guys are all really good guys, I think that that's overrated to a point because DeMarcus Cousins is a very good passer, and I don't feel like he would be selfish on the court on such a good team. I think he would be so happy that he would just be a destroyer. And you think about the idea of a fundamental foundation of Curry, Cousins, and Klay is that you can put a myriad of pieces around them and it'll work. And what I'm concerned about with the Warriors is that, I think we've talked about this on the podcast, I think we talked about it after they won, is that I don't think they're super team proof. I think that they're a really good team, but I think that they have this vulnerability in a 7-game playoff series against dominant individual players. And I think that Cousins takes a lot of that vulnerability out. I think that what he does is he is another counter that other teams just don't have the personnel for. And if you want to play Draymond at center, you still have Draymond. You can still do it.
No, you can't. No, you can't bench Cousins. No way. No. Not going to happen. He'll be too upset. He's too big of a star. You have to play him.
Okay, if you think that, then that changes it a little bit. But I'm not talking about, like, permanently benching him or anything. But, like, you know, if there were a stretch during a game that you wanted to do it or that it was working, that you could keep it going.
Not playing in crunch time for him, not an option. Like, he would be a total malcontent. And, you know, given his stature in the league, I think that would, frankly, kind of be understandable if he did. So, I mean, so that's the risk.
But you wouldn't really be benching him because he's amazing.
Yeah, well, all right. I mean, but you look at it, right? They're the number two offense this year. Yeah, he probably would make you better on offense. Sure. I agree with that. Probably makes you worse on defense. You know, he's not as good as Bogut. He can't, not someone who can switch out like Green could when he was playing center. So, you know, do they still have the number one defense if he's out there every night? I mean, he improved on defense. He's a little better. He probably would do well in the culture, but yeah, I don't know. All right. We probably spent a little too much time on this. Any other fake trades you want to do with it? We do have some news to get to as well.
I'll just mention the team that Phoenix is an underrated team because they have a lot of assets, just depending on what they want to throw in. They're a team that would be considered because of things like Eric Bledsoe, Markieff Morris, Alex Len. Like, they have assets.
Yeah, Toronto, Lowry, and Jonas Valanciunas, something you might, and maybe, you know, Caboclo, you know, some draft assets. They have that Knicks pick as well, although they have to swap it with Denver first. So that's another potential way to go there as well. But anyway,
let's go to news.
Yeah, very well. So Raymond Felton has opted in, big surprise. He's making about $4 million and, you know, wasn't going to get that on the open market. Basically didn't play at all. So, but that will reduce the Mavericks cap space. Maybe you can look at him as a potential backup point guard, but probably not. That's probably mostly dead salary.
But they knew that when they made the trade that they made, and it's better to have him than Calderon right now.
That's true. We mentioned it before, Thaddeus Young opted out of the final year of his contract that would have paid him almost $10 million, and he's become an unrestricted free agent. What do you think of that move? Is that what you would have done as his agent?
I think so. I'm not sure he's going to get $10 million per year, but I think you go for the security now. He's done well, and I think that there aren't a ton of guys that do what he does on the market, so I think that he should get pretty solid value, and he can get to a team that has more hope.
Yeah, and Thaddeus Young seems like he's been around forever. He just turned 27 a couple of days ago.
Yeah, exactly, been on decent teams in his past, just not his present.
Yeah, this is the time probably. I mean, he's going to really need to refine his three-point shot. I think, you know, he's best as a small ball four. He's at the point now, I think, in his career where not really someone who can play the three any longer. And he's also someone who is not really going to hold up against the biggest power forwards, but against a big guy, you know, with a big guy next to him and Brook Lopez and his ability to shoot, you know, certainly a solid defender. Good small ball four option, either as a guy coming off the bench or, you know, starting next to a Stouter center, especially in the Eastern Conference. If you're going to get into the playoffs, not a ton of big post up behemoths at the four position in the East.
Yep. Another news piece is that Mo Williams is apparently open to a return to the Cavs. I personally think he would be a substantial upgrade over Matthew Dellavedova. Agreed?
Yeah, he would be a good fit there. I mean, I wouldn't want to pay him much more than the minimum, and Dan and I talked about their crazy luxury tax issues, so who knows how much he would want to come back for. That was Chris Haynes who reported that. Basically just a rumor, but you know, I think he would be a nice fit there. Another one from Chad Ford. Dario Saric will not play for the Sixers next season. Kevin Pelton and I talked about that yesterday. Saric was basically assumed right around the draft that when he signed his contract in Turkey, that he wouldn't come over for 2 years. There had been some talk now that they were having this a thought that he could come over this year, but you know, probably not going to happen or not going to happen. Another one, Lakers supposedly 80-20 on drafting Jahlil Okafor at number two. That's according to Chad Ford. That doesn't surprise me. I think that's the way they should go, even though he's not the greatest fit with Randall. They don't have enough assets where they should really be like drafting for fit with someone we don't even know is any good yet in Randall.
Yeah, I think we're in agreement there. And also, Julius Randle, I don't think he's a strong enough piece that you make any decisions on him. You know, you choose who you think is the best player, who will be the best player, and it doesn't matter how they fit with your current roster, because your current roster sucks.
Well said. Jameer Nelson opted out of his second year with the Nuggets. He had signed for the room exception, about $2.8 million with the Mavericks. Then he got traded around quite a bit. Ended up with the Nuggets. I'm guessing he probably wants out of Denver, as a lot of people seem to. We'll see what happens with him. Still a very good backup point guard option for people. Another guy maybe who might fit well in Cleveland. Goran Dragic, as everyone knew, declined his option with the Heat, which was for about $7.5 million. There's talk that they offered him $80 million. He could potentially even get more than that. Dan and I talked about that a couple of days ago. So he will be a free agent for sure. Another report that the Timberwolves are shopping Anthony Bennett. I would imagine that is a prelude if and when they don't get any takers for him, that they will just decline his fourth-year rookie option, which as the number one pick is actually pretty expensive.
And there's a parallel also to that with Austin Rivers, that a disappointing player that they declined the option and there was still a trade market because there's a team that would be willing to take him on a flyer. But it's also another thing when people talk about the high price that the Cavs paid for Kevin Love. I mean, that kind of assumes more of Anthony Bennett than he has been.
Yeah, I think everyone kind of thought that he was basically, there was not much chance that he was going to work out.
We need to talk about Sergio Yule too.
We talked about a little bit with him, with Pelton. There's a report from the Spanish media that they offered him $23.8 million. Maybe it's not that high, but he does have a $5.6 million buyout. If anyone's curious on the mechanics of how the buyouts work and how they can get that money, the Rockets are prohibited from paying more than $625,000 this year of that. And that means that Yule has to pay the rest of it out of what he's going to be paid. I did a piece on the same situation with Nikola Mirotic on Basketball Insiders about a year ago. So if anyone's really interested in the very Byzantine cap mechanics of this situation, look that up. It's pretty interesting, actually, but too complicated to explain here. But Yule is going to be pretty good. I don't know if he's worth $8 million a year. Maybe he is in the new environment. That would basically eat up all of the cap space the Rockets are projected to have. But I think he could be good and he could really help them. Good fit next to Harden and a combo guard, plays good D, can shoot the ball, get to the basket a little bit, and he's right in the sweet spot of being about 27. So good time for him to come over.
He would have been worth it for him during the playoffs this year.
Yeah, no, that's true. Let's see. There's also talk that the Heat might try and move Mario Chalmers and Chris Anderson. I think both of those guys are kind of negative assets at this point from a salary standpoint. Might still be able to help. I think Birdman is getting near to the point where just the injuries and age have accumulated enough that he's, going to be more of a 5-10 minute a game guy, fourth big type potentially. But that's big surprise there. They really want to reduce their luxury tax payment. Maybe if they can make that move, that could be a solution for them to offer Dwayne Wade more of what he's looking for this year and curb their luxury tax payment.
Yeah, I mean, as we get into option season, I think we've talked about it, other people have talked about it. I think it's the most interesting decision in a lot of different ways. And the other one is a guy that we're just about to talk about, Monte Ellis.
Yeah, it was reported by Tim McMahon that there's some possibility that he would opt in and then the Mavericks would trade him to somewhere that he couldn't necessarily go if he were a free agent. Cleveland comes to mind, certainly.
Yes.
For that, you suggested that. So we'll see if that's something that could happen.
Can I give the CBA nerd mechanics on how that would work? Because that's actually very interesting as well.
You're talking about the Haywood trade?
Yeah, because...
We talked about that pretty well with Dan, I think.
So. Oh, okay. Well, yeah, the only thing that I have to mention with that is that the Mavericks cannot acquire Brendan Haywood.
Oh, because they amnestied him?
Right. So they would have to use a third party. However, that third party would be very easy to come by because all they would need is the space for, like, 10 minutes to do it, and then they could cut Haywood, and they could give him a couple late second-round picks for their trouble.
Ah, yeah. All right. No, that is actually a great point. And then another one that kind of made me laugh a little bit, Mark Stein reporting, not the reporting, but just the kind of hopefulness of this, that the Nets are willing to move Mason Plumlee for a lottery pick.
Team USA center Mason Plumlee.
Yeah. He is not worth that.
No, he is not.
And that trade will not happen.
No. Mason Plumlee is one of those people who I think, I always wonder what's the appeal. I think Amin Alhassan has talked about that before. He's a good player, but he's not a huge contributor to a great team, and it seems unlikely to me that he ever will be. And it's also crazy to me because I like Miles Plumlee, his brother, quite a bit because he actually protects the rim.
Well, yeah, I mean, I wouldn't say that I like Miles that much better either, but I think the reason why, if it seems I'm too dismissive, you know, he was on Team USA. Hey, he's only a second-year guy. Well, yeah, but he's 25 already. He came out of school, you know, he graduated when he was 23. So that's why you don't any, you know, he can't shoot the ball at all. You know, basically is a center, more of a power forward from kind of a strength standpoint. And then not really that great of a defender. He's kind of high activity, but, you know, really like overactive in a lot of ways in pick and roll defense. And, you know, basically kind of a dunker around the rim, which is valuable, but not really someone who is a very lower echelon starting center at best, maybe even like a good backup. Can't play power forward at all. So if you're bringing him off the bench and you have a superior center who's starting, you just can't play him that many minutes. Playing him together with Lopez was a complete disaster due to his lack of shooting range. So that's why it's not worth a lottery pick for those who might have been kind of overrating him a little bit more. That's why I said there's no way that trade happens. But maybe they can find someone who would do that, but I wouldn't even remotely consider it.
Yeah, the only other piece of news that I saw was Scott Howard Cooper. He reported that he's heard that the Warriors are exploring the possibility of trading up, which is very interesting because a lot of people had not thought that they were willing, because trading up requires other assets, and what it sounded like from everything, you know, that I had heard, and I haven't heard a ton since the finals because they've been busy doing other things, but it didn't seem like there was willingness to part with assets that would be necessary. But that makes this more fascinating from the Warriors' perspective, because even it just opens up possibilities.
Yeah, it does. I'm not sure what asset they would trade, though, to move up. I mean, maybe some future second-rounders, because maybe they're getting the feeling that, and again, you know, this isn't exactly the most specific report in the world, but exploring the possibility of trading up. I mean, I'm not sure what they could offer to get them higher. I mean, I think the idea would be then to get a better pick that they could then move Lee's salary for, that somebody would accept. That's what it seems like to me. I don't see them surrendering anyone who's actually important, though, to do that. So it's hard to say what the mechanics of that would be. Maybe I'm missing something. But
Maybe Spates, but I don't think that a team would allow them to move up very far for him.
Yeah. No, they have the team option on him for a little under $4 million. But, yeah, I agree with you. I don't think that that's really too enticing for a team that's looking to get in the draft pick market. All right, we done. That was an exhausting series of fake trade scenarios, but enjoyable to just engage in completely rampant speculation like that.
As you can imagine, I've been smiling this whole time. I've loved this. I've loved this far too much.
All right, well, let's call it quits then. We will be back tomorrow night with a little draft preview, and then obviously draft night. I'm sure we'll have tons and tons to talk about trades. Might even have to do 2 days worth of draft wrap up there. We'll see how active it is with trades, and then also just the draft as well. Follow Danny on Twitter, Danny LaRue, LeRoux. I'm Nate Duncan, MBA. Subscribe on iTunes. Give us a rating. A lot of people have been doing that, and it's been pretty positive, thankfully, which is nice. That really helps us out a lot. Help us keep this going. So, yeah, that's about it. Hope you enjoyed, and if this was too many fake trades for you, let us know. We'll be back tomorrow night. Talk to you then.